Hello, everyone. My name is David Smith, and this is the Armchair Commentary. On this week's episode, with so many sports on the go right now, Steve and I delve into as many topics as we can cover. We cover what's going on in the MLB to the NHL playoffs and NBA ramp up. We talk about who's doing it best and who really probably shouldn't have done it at all. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Armchair Commentary, at Armchair Common 2, and you can find Steve at SteveSteele23 on Instagram and Twitter. You can find him on Facebook, but as he will tell you, it's not really on there. If you care to support this podcast, head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. Take a look at all the tiers. We still have our draft contest going on where any tier you sign up for, you get Jack Schwartz draft guide. Win your league this year with Jack's draft guide. All you have to do is sign up for one tier over at patreon.com/armchaircommentary. Without further ado, let's get right to it. We're back with another episode. Steve and I had so much on the go in terms of conversation this past week. Lots of positive feedback from our previous episode, but we couldn't really hammer down one single topic to talk about. There's just too much to dive into in the world of sports because everything is happening all at once, thanks to COVID-19 and leagues trying to restart. So I want to kind of kick off our conversation today for this week about the NBA, kind of get your thoughts on, I've had some opinions on the league versus the other restarts. I know that you're a basketball fan more than you're a modern hockey fan, so you may not necessarily agree, but I found that the NBA restart, like play-in, I guess it's a play-in schedule, pre-playoff, I found a lot of the early games tough to watch. I didn't find the atmosphere that electric, especially compared to what hockey put on. And maybe that's because hockey jumped right into playoffs for whatever reason. That's what they opted for. But since then, the NBA has picked it up. Or maybe it's just because the Raptors keep smashing people that I'm enjoying it more. What do you think of how they've kind of restarted? Their bubble technique seems to have worked well, same with the NHL and keeping COVID at bay. And just what are your thoughts on the kind of the atmosphere, how games are being played? And maybe we can talk about some of our picks going forward into this playoff schedule soon.
I mean, I love it. I think it's great. Like, I like the weird digital fan thing. It is a little weird, though. I will say there's the sponsorship stuff is a little strange with going on in the court. You see a bunch of guys wearing like Black Lives Matter stuff and they're kneeling for anthems. And I have no issues with that, obviously. But then like there's ads for Goya beans off to the right. You're like, oh, right, because they're pro-Trump and everything else. So obviously they hate this whole movement. And there's all kinds of weird things going on like that. But like the weird digital like piping in fans thing was really funny. For example, the Raptors Heat game. I joked, I laughed, and they're like Heat fans. I'm like, if there's Heat fans out there listening to this, you're not a real Heat fan. Stop it. And like Miami Heat fans are so fickle that like the Raptors went up by like 10 or 15 at one point and the whole Heat cheering section of like digital fans disappeared. I'm like, oh, look, it's just like they're back in Miami because like if the Heat are losing, no one goes to the games. It's great. It felt like just like home. But all jokes aside, no, I found the basketball was a little rugged in the beginning. I don't have much of a problem with the atmosphere. Like, they're not playing in arenas like the NHL is. The NHL is playing in Edmonton, Toronto. So you have those, like, taped-off seats with digital screens and stuff, which kind of give, like, an interesting vibe to it. But I still really like basketball because you're getting really great camera angles that you didn't used to get because of fans and crowds and stuff of that nature. Like, we're getting way closer to the game than we ever had before. So, like, I love it. I find the audio isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, where I thought I could hear, like, all the trash talk and all the bleeps and everything else that were going to happen. So that's great. But, yeah, the unprecedented access to the game that we now get because of a crowdless bubble or the bubble scenario. And, like you said, like both hockey and the NBA have nailed the bubbles, which is really shocking when you consider that the NBA is in Florida. It actually only further accentuates how strong they've done this. But the NBA is like a first-class organization in general. They they understand that the players are what make the NBA. Without stars and players and without taking care of those guys, it's not quite like the NFL where like the league changes stars all the time, but the teams endure. I don't think that a team like, say, well, I mean, you look at the New York Knicks, for example, even though they still support them, that brand is still valuable because where they are in the market, they are in Madison Square Garden. But like, without stars, if the Knicks had a superstar, they would be larger than life, right? Whereas I feel like other sports, you don't really need superstars as long as your team is good. So I like the bubble. I like how everybody came. The guys that opted out were either hurt going in or their team had nothing to play for. And I do agree that like maybe there isn't as much atmosphere in the 8 lead-up games, the seeding games, so to speak. But we're getting a lot out of the seeding games, like the Lakers' inability to score and defense is absolutely throttling them, which is no one saw coming. Another one would be like Toronto's team defense seems to have gotten even better as everyone's healthy now. And they're just like, they're suffocating teams. And Giannis in the bubble is exciting. James Harden's been great. Although like the one thing I have to say that it hurts my feelings is they definitely have white barbers in the NBA bubble. Because guys look messed up out there. Like it doesn't, their fade, their beards, everything else. Shit is tragic. James Harden looks like he just got wheeled in off the street. Like they need to break bubble protocol and bring in that man a barber. But all jokes aside, like, yeah, like the Lakers' offensive issues are things that we never saw coming. Because before the season started, we all had this weird idea that, like, you know, the Lakers are this and this and this. But, like, outside of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, who are both kind of struggling offensively, the Lakers don't have anything. So what look like a juggernaut, which makes this year of the NBA so exciting anyway, is there isn't that one true juggernaut super team anymore. It's not like the years past where Golden State stacked the deck and we're like, haha, we're going to steamroll the league. That doesn't exist now. This is wide open. The Lakers can be beaten. The Oklahoma City Thunder, who were written off for dead last offseason when they traded Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. Chris Paul had been so devalued by playing alongside James Harden that we forgot the point guard existed. And now, man, OKC just dusted the Lakers by 25 points in the night, and that wasn't a fluke. So and those guys are gearing up for playoff games. Like, this isn't guys resting and doing stuff. They're playing themselves back into shape. This isn't a simple case of, oh, well, they'll get it together. Seeing the Lakers get battered by a team that was considered a lottery team going into the year, like OKC, in a meaningful game. Like, yes, the Lakers are going to hold on to the first seed, but LeBron isn't taking these games off. His body's had 5 months to not put on minutes, so he is going for it. He's not resting. Like, even Kawhi is not resting. Like, guys aren't taking games off. Everyone had a huge chunk of time to prepare for this, so everybody's healthy. Everyone's strong. So what you're seeing is a really strong litmus test. The NHL, to counter that so I don't talk about the NBA constantly, is – I found the games when they first are like the atmosphere, I think you nailed it. I think hockey has the best atmosphere. There's something with those digital screens being pulled down over the seats and the tight camera angles that just gives it a better feel. Probably the least lonely looking sport of the baseball is just a train wreck with the open stands, like sitting in stadiums. It's like, look, I love baseball, but the first night I was miserable. I think I even tweeted about it. Like, this is awful. I can't watch this, but I ended up watching it because I love baseball. But I think hockey has really captured like a really interesting vibe of like the games. I do hate the constant anthems every game, and like they pipe in someone singing in another building or something. And I'm like, this just,
yeah.
I guess I'm not really a big fan of anthems playing before sports anymore. I think after like the Kaepernick thing and everyone like making up their own agendas and what was actually occurring there has kind of like ruined. I didn't really
care. This may surprise people. I think anthems are outdated at sports and we don't need them.
I don't
Canadian American otherwise. I don't think, unless it's the Olympics and you've just won a gold.
Yeah,
that's we don't need to hear the anthem. It's a like stay over from war times. We don't need it. There's no like desperate need for patriotism at the beginning of a sporting event.
No.
I would rather they use that time to promote artists on upcoming labels than listening to an anthem. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely prefer to see like a live performance by an artist that isn't the anthem, especially like I don't want to take shots at the American National Anthem because I do prefer it to ours. But it's such an awkward song to sing too, like the way that song is composed. And like it's just like I just do America the Beautiful for 45 seconds if that's the case. America the Beautiful is a song. The Star Spangled Banner is a weird journey of peaks and valleys and notes, and people don't always hit it right. The best way to sing the American National Anthem is either be like Whitney Houston or just kind of monotone your way through it and don't try to like rise and up. Of course, like a notoriously hilarious version of the anthem failure is like Fergie at the All-Star game a year or two ago, where she like tried to, I don't know what she tried to do, but like I don't want to see it. Like, I don't, I hate watching, for example, a hockey game and 2/3 of the team is Russian and watching guys like just shuffle endlessly listening to the Canadian national anthem or the American national anthem. Like, it just doesn't make any, there's nobody there. There's no crowd. So just do away with it.
It's particularly pointless right now, but I find it pointless regardless.
Of course, except for where you said the Olympics. But one last thing I wanted to touch on, and now I've kind of forgotten it. So we'll just move on, and if I remember it, I'll go back to it.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the atmosphere in the NHL is because of the people announcing games are telling you everything that is happening. Versus the like opposite end of the spectrum, which is baseball, which is more conversational. Mm-hmm. Something like one of my favorite things to do in non-COVID times is listen to baseball games on the radio.
Yes.
I think it's a lost art, announcing a game properly, knowing when to give space to listen to the crowd as it like ebbs and flows, you know, and there are many that have done it for a long time. Very well, and you know, legends and greats and stuff. But I just love listening, even guys that are, you know, bashed and hated. I don't care. I like listening to baseball on the radio. I like listening to that. And I think NBA is somewhere in the middle. There's some conversational aspects about it. They're not talking about every pass that happens. They're not talking about, you know, like they may like save the radio. I know that, you know, some guys will definitely talk a lot more on the radio, but I feel like when I'm watching a TV broadcast of NBA, a lot more of the time is spent on kind of the conversation around what's happening in the game, maybe about talking about some of the players, where they are positionally in the standings, maybe some outlandish stat that's happening, or they're on the verge of breaking some sort of, you know, never heard of record or some crazy, like, you know, if someone's, maybe they're talking about who is it that went off for 54? Warren?
Warren, yeah.
So Warren goes off. You know, I don't mind them talking about that. But usually what I find when I watch a basketball game is I'm seeing more of, like, you know, the conversation around the game and what's happening. And hockey is just constant, like, you know, puck from this person to this person, up the boards. And you're not really taking – there's no pauses in that break. And baseball, again, is the complete opposite. Baseball is nothing but pauses. So okay. It's difficult to watch when there are a ton. And that's not taking away from basketball, because as I said, as the games have gone on and we're getting closer to playoff time, I feel like everybody's kind of working themselves into game shape. And you see more teams that are looking to kind of, and especially the Raptors, who are looking to kind of close out and try to go back to back. I find their games a lot more exciting than I did, say, their first game. So I guess we're three in.
Yeah. You didn't find the Lakers game exciting?
I found the Lakers game excellent, but I didn't find it as exciting as the Magic game, which was a wash. I mean, that was a walk.
You found the Magic game more? Like, I thought you'd say the Heat game. Like, the Heat game was, like, tight and, like, close, and it came down to the wire, and that was... Yeah. But
you're right.
The point you just made, I just want to touch on a couple of things you just said. Like, so with hockey, play-by-play is everything's continual motion. So like, as long as there's play happening, everything's a continual motion. Things are cycling. People are moving. It's back and forth. Now, basketball is back and forth, but guys get up to, like, you know, their offensive end, and then they assess things and stand there for a few seconds and blah, blah, blah. And, like, you can't be like, he dribbles left, he dribbles right, he puts it through his legs, he stops, he fakes a crossover, he hezzies, someone sets a screen. Like, you know, like, it doesn't work.
No.
There's too much basketball to call when you get that scientific. But, like, for example, in hockey is, like, you know, Marner catches the puck on the right end boards. He breaks – he crosses the blue line, gets past a defender. He stops and cuts backs, waiting for help. Like, you know, like, you can call that. It's – but they don't call, like, Marner with a left deke, right deke, triple deke, Charlie Conway from Mayo. Like, you know, it doesn't work that way. So, like, hockey is the best play-by-play sport to call. Because in baseball, it's, like, something happens every 9 to 15 seconds, you know, like – gets a sign, goes into the stretch, and curve ball just down in the way, ball one. And then they have to fill that gap again. So in football, the same way, right? Like, you can't play by – football play-by-play is like, okay, lines up in the center, snaps the ball, he drops back. Ooh, you know, and that's it. Like, and even that, they don't call it like that. So, like, hockey is the continual motion it's the best sport suited for that. Now, the other thing you said was radio, the Blue Jays radio games. I'm assuming you mean the Blue Jays, we're Jays fans.
Yep.
News 95.7 carries the Rogers radio broadcast, which I've always found personally superior to the television get call of the game. Cheek's no longer there, but like a lot of the guys that did call the games for years, I remember back, and we talked with Vernon Wells, back when Vernon Wells and the team, when I discovered News 95.7, I remember like having my stereo system set up to my television. This is 2006. This is back when we did things like this, and there was a radio in the stereo system. I would turn the audio of the television off. I would put the radio call of the game on and watch the game. That was a thing I used to do. So that was back – I don't remember their names now, but like Wilner, who now does the play-by-play, I think. Wilner was just like the radio call-in post-game guy, and he would give updates around the league in the seventh inning stretch. So I'm with you. I do love baseball on the radio. Obviously, like visual more, but I do enjoy baseball on the radio. Listening to hockey on the radio I find unbearable. I can't do that. But also to counterpoint the hockey thing is I hate hockey announcers. Like – like Bob Cole and Harry Neal were great, but those guys are long gone. I'd rather like stick a Q-tip through my ears like Hellraiser than listen to Jim Houston talk for 5 minutes. Like I find that guy unbearable. Like the NBC coverage on hockey is so haphazard. Plus you have idiots like Mike Milbury saying Jake Muzzin faked an injury.
Yeah,
like
it's a good time for him to stay down. What a jabroni.
Milbury's always – the only thing, the nice thing I have to say about Mike Milbury is when he was a hockey player in the 70s, he went into the crowd and got in a fight and he beat a fan with their own shoe. And that at least entertained me. Since then, the only thing entertaining about Mike Milbury is how bad Mike Milbury is. Just an ass. A terrible GM. Not a great hockey player. He was a mediocre head coach that took overwhelmingly talented Boston teams to dead ends for years in the 90s. And, like, just – what are you doing here? You don't belong here. Like, I think he has – I don't know what – he must have photos of somebody at a network or something or somewhere in power. He must have, like, something like a Bettman for that idiot to still have a job. Because if someone – if anybody out there has a redeeming quality about Mike Milbury other than the one I just shared where he beat a fan with his own shoe, I think it was the rain in New York at Madison Square Garden in, like, 76 or 77, I think it happened. I think it was Cherry's Bruins. But otherwise, yeah, like, just hockey and – hockey personalities in general, like at least in basketball, they're old players, and the old players kind of have fun and loosen up a little bit. Old hockey players doing coverage of hockey is, I don't know, man. It's kind of like watching someone write like their name over and over on a chalkboard. Like hockey players, there are hockey players that have had personality in the past, but none of them have anything interesting to say. They try to get scientific, but the game has changed almost entirely since they played. Like, let's be clear, hockey has evolved a lot since I was a kid. Like, we'll say go back to like 1994 till now. Like, the game's changed 3 or 4 times over since then. So, like, a lot of these guys are giving very antiquated eye check tests, and the game's very heavily based on analytics now, and they don't understand it. They're old groggy dinosaurs. And I'm also one of those old groggy dinosaurs that hates analytics. But, like, that's probably my biggest pet peeve with hockey is having to listen to a bunch of blowhards that get paid entirely too much money to overcomplicate their jobs.
Yeah. All this talk of announcers reminds me of the perfect Simpsons clip, because there's always a Simpsons clip for everything. And it's the Simpsons, all of Springfield's watching a soccer game. I think they had a World Cup game. And the American announcers were there. And they're the wing, back to the center, holds it. And then it goes to the European announcers and they're freaking out. The wing, back to the center, he holds it. And it's just the excitement that builds. And you just don't see that with the American crew for hockey is probably the most atrocious thing.
I don't know who the Sportsnet guys are. I don't remember. Like I said, after Bob Cole and Harry Neal, I think all hockey.
I grew up with Bob Cole and Harry Neal.
Yeah. Those guys are great. They're the best, right? Like, I mean, older people will say like, well, there was Foster Hewitt, but I'm not 165 years old, so I can't comment on Foster Hewitt. But, you know, Bob Cole, Harry Neal are the voice of hockey to me. So these other guys, and like Houston's got that weird nasal pitch in his voice that just, And I think he does the voiceover for the NHL hockey video games too. And I just don't like that guy, but I don't want to just spend all my time slandering Jim Houston. Cause I'm sure there's lots of other guys I don't like, and I just don't know their names, but Jim Houston's been doing it for a long time. So he sticks out. But like, I even hate like the TSN guys. Like I have no time for Bob McKenzie. I do like Elliot Friedman though. I think he does hockey, and I like Elliot Friedman.
So this is a funny take to me, because Elliot Friedman gets kind of, he's either on the love or hate scale. mm-hmm. For a lot of people. I've always been pretty like, I feel like I liked him. I always liked him. And then people started like on him hard, and I don't really get where the hate is coming from.
I don't either.
I'm really okay. He's a hockey insider. I'm using air quotes here. I don't really care. I like him better than Bob McKenzie. Put that out there. On the topic of puck, your Leafs are going tonight, but last night, the Habs decided to play a little trick on my heart. They ultimately won, but they went down 3-1. You didn't watch a ton of the game, but you did get to see the Petrie goal, if I'm not mistaken. Did you not? What do you think about how Montreal's been handling this like ultimate underdog role? They really don't belong. They're not really built for this. They traded away a bunch of the role players for picks. They were clearly planning on competing for the lottery, and here they are, a game away from advancing to likely face some other juggernaut of a team in the East, but probably the Capitals, if I'm not mistaken, maybe the Flyers. But what do you think about how Montreal?
You're not going to be in any series you go into if you advance. That's logically yeah.
clear. No, Montreal did. They're the bottom.
Yeah, unless they bring up an AHL team, Chief, you're going to be the underdog, and I love a good underdog. See, as a Leafs fan, you'd expect me to hate the Habs. I don't. I maybe it's because I wanted to watch them fucking play Leafs in a playoff series for so long that I actually kind of underhanded cheer for them. I know I hated them as a kid, but now as an adult, I just want to see a Leafs-Habs playoff series before I die. And we've been so close a few times that like we're just right there on the precipice. And this is not going to be the year, obviously. I don't think that's going to happen. But I just hold out that – I call it the Coke dream, that one day it will happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough. You were talking about the Petrie goal. The Petrie goal was outlandish. What a goal. Like, so I was watching the Raptors game last night, 'cause basketball over everything, especially Raptors. And it was 3-1. You weren't participating in our group chat because obviously
I was on the edge of the game.
Yeah, that's fine. I totally understand that. But I asked Justin, I'm like, what's the score? And he's like, 3-1. I'm like, damn, it was a good run though, right? Like they at least got a game out of this. And then he's like, and then like, I'm watching the Raptors game. The Raptors are easily handling the Magic. And he's like, 3-3. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm on Twitter and there's a guy on Twitter I follow. I think he's like Marneland Matthews or something. I think his name is. Anyway, he's a young guy from Ontario, but he's a huge diehard Leafs fan. And like, keeps me up to date when I'm not maybe following my hockey as well as I should. And he said, what a snipe by Petrie or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. So obviously I flip over to on the replay because I'm watching streams, so I'm a little behind. And I caught the goal and I was like, wow, what a shot. Like we were talking about it earlier, you said the guy can shoot, but like there's I made the point earlier, like there's guys that can shoot. There's the Joe Sakics of our time, or if you want to make more modern, like Austin Matthews, Ovechkin, great shots, like guys that have quick releases and great shots. That's the degree of difficulty and the improbability of that goal that Petrie scored. Like he used Murray's shoulder to elevate the puck a little bit more and into a place that like if you line some of the best shooters up in the league and ask them to duplicate that shot, they probably maybe convert 2 of every 100. Like that was. It was destiny at that point. I think when that one went in, like I had full faith. You go back and read the group chat. I had full faith they were going to win that game. Like the goals like that don't get wasted. You know, like they're backbreakers. Now the funny part about the Habs series is you kind of made the joke that like earlier that maybe the Penguins have been broken. As a lifelong Penguin hater and not a fan at all, I know one thing right off the devil. You know, so I'm not ready to go. I know you're not either. Yeah. I know it was more of a jest, or like you know. Yes. Wishful thinking, but I want to go on the record here right now and say, like, I don't want to put that energy into the air that the Penguins are done to have that karmic retribution. So, yeah, the Penguins can still very much win the series. They're good enough to win 3 in a row, or 2 in a row, whatever they need to. They're definitely good enough to do that. But it's got to hurt the Penguins getting in kind of a shootout and still losing, you know?
Like, well, this series was billed as the Pens are going to get a free pass as long as they can beat Carey Price. And the game last night, they beat Carey Price on a couple of like bad defensive giveaways. And they still end up giving away that game. And there were countless times where the Pens just didn't look like they had any. They gave up a goal and they were down. They were up 3-2. And that's still an easy enough, like, you can still close that out. You can tighten up defensively and close that out, especially a veteran team. And the Pens didn't do it. In fact, they kind of regressed a bit from their play earlier. Early in the game, they were hitting. They were winning puck battles. It felt like Montreal couldn't get a puck battle to save their life. They were, every time they dump in, the Pens were on it, clear the zone, and they were back on a break. The only breaks Montreal was getting was like an odd man rush here and there. And even when they got them, they weren't converting like proper shots. Although they did finally decide to have more shots than penalty minutes this game, which was a giant plus in my eyes.
Well, but, I mean, in that series, I feel like the refs, I made the joke. I don't think I made it on any kind of social media. I don't know where I wrote it, but you commented on it where I was kind of frustrated during game two, where like the ref's hand was going up in the air so often against the Habs. It looked like he was auditioning for the Village People cover band. Like, he was just trying to do the YMCA all night long, like, with the like, it was ridiculous. And it was funny because the night before, I just watched the Leafs-Blue Jackets game where I think there was three total penalties in the game, and Columbus was committing interfering like an 80s wrestling heel faction. It was ridiculous. So, just like, I couldn't fathom what I was watching. I think I even messaged, I'm like, we need these refs in the Leafs series because the Leafs are so much more skilled and fast than Columbus that, like, if we had those refs, man, we'd get like 13 power plays a game. Because, like, the Habs are at least fast and, like, you know, they're young and they keep up with the Penguins pace wise. The Blue Jackets try to smother the Leafs pace at all costs. And I mean, that's what they have to do, obviously. They have no chance. They can't outskill the Leafs. But here nor there, like, the officiating in that Montreal Pittsburgh series is, not great, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't like overly involved officials. I don't know if I've ever made the point of the podcast, but I've always believed that we should replace our officials with cameras and robots. I think that would be the best way to do it, especially basketball, because NBA officiating is – never mind. I'm not going to make that reference. But they're just crooked. And, I'm just happy it's all back. And you know what? People have been saying it on social media, so I want to say it here now too, because I agree, is I don't know how I'm going to be able to go back to normal sports. The staggered throughout the day stuff they do now is A+. Like, I love that, like, I can go from, like, hey, this is Sixers Pacers, and now here's the Leafs. Oh, and the Raptors start at 4, and the Leafs start at 9, or the Habs start at 9, the Lakers start at 7. You know what I mean? Like, that staggering throughout the day because of the bubble. Like, obviously, when they get fans back and there's crowds and stuff, like, you can't really do that because you can't have a basketball game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. I understand that because, you know, ticket sales would suck. Yeah. But, like, as long as we're bubbling sports, I'm here for this schedule system. It's delightful. Well,
it's pretty fantastic. What do you think? Obviously, your Leafs had a big blow. With Muzzin going down, crummy cross check and unfortunate kind of follow through. I still don't know what fully happened.
It didn't. It looked pretty innocuous to me, but I was kind of preoccupied when it happened.
When I watched it, I kind of felt the same way. It looked like he got cross checked, which is like, okay, so that's a penalty. He cross checked the guy down, but sometimes they don't. They don't call that, whatever, you know, ticky-tack plays, fine. You want to let that one go. But then it just kind of looked like he hit the ice, he was on all fours, and, like, bumped the boards and then kind of, like, went shoulder into someone's, like, leg, and he just couldn't move. I don't know if it's a pinched nerve or what exactly it was that got him, but something got him bad enough that he couldn't get – he had to be stretchered off the ice, and he's out for the remainder of this series. And that's confirmed, I believe.
It is confirmed, yeah.
So now that Muzzin's out, who's a big part of the reformed Leafs D, and I think Marinson's checking in, are you still hopeful? Are you concerned that, obviously it's a big chunk gone, but is there still hope here? Is Toronto still able to pull through this series and kind of move on?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's hard to say, like, but I think the Leafs are still very much good enough to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just losing someone like Muzzin, who's such a stabilizing force, or lack, even, I equate the Leafs without Muzzin to not quite as bad, but something as similar to the Oilers when Draisaitl and McDavid are on the ice, where it's just utter chaos and no one knows where they need to be. It's not that bad. We're not that bad, but we're like two steps above that. Like it's
yeah. I understand what you're saying. I'm still hopeful. I think that they look good. I think that everything is still going to be up in the air until you see how it looks on the ice. For instance, one of those guys who is
I don't want to discuss him. I got to watch him in a few minutes here. That's enough for me. I'm just grateful Jake Gartner's gone. I know like Jake Gartner is better than Marinson per se, but like Jake Gartner has given me serious heartburn over the years, and good riddance. He's in Carolina now, and he's probably going to kill them in a big game.
He's on the other side already.
They're probably going to eliminate a big elimination game, and he'll blow a tire and give the puck away to the team's best scorer in front of his own goalie, who like he probably slit the Achilles tendon of when he fell. Like he's just ridiculously accident prone in big moments. But I got no issues with Jake Gartner. I swear, all this is I'm not over any of it. F him. But anyway, last week I ridiculed the Carolina Hurricanes, and this week the Carolina Hurricanes like dusted the Rangers, and they're waiting. I gotta say one thing: we got to talk about hockey. I hate the seeding games in hockey. I don't like it. It's hard to watch playoff very meaningful hockey and then go watch, well, if they lose this game, they're going to be a two seed. Like the stakes aren't the same. So at least in basketball, everyone's playing seeding games and everything on the even keel. But how do you watch like, you know, the Habs battle back and take a lead in the series they have no business being in and then go watch Washington versus Tampa? I know those games weren't at the same time, but like the game, like, okay. Oh, like Boston lost their first seed. They're like, oh, it sucks, but whatever. We're the number two seed. We'll live. Like, oh God, like it's the seeding doesn't really mean much. Ask the Penguins. So,
right.
I don't know, man.
They have to play something. Otherwise they're just sitting there cold. Right. Like, I think that was the thought.
I think it should have just started with a playoff series. I think that everyone should have been in a series. Like, I think that you should have had the Habs up against, say, I don't know, who's the one seed now? It's Tampa, right? Or is it Washington? Who's the one seed these
times? I think it's Tampa.
Yeah, so it should be Habs-Tampa in the first round. It should have been Boston and Montreal in the first round. Like that's what it should have been as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's such a vibe change. Like, I watch every Leafs game like I'm about to die, and then all of a sudden I'm watching, you know, who's playing in the West? Just St. Louis versus Dallas or something. I'm like, I don't care.
St. Louis and Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't – like, there's no stakes in this. Like, nobody's going home from this. No one's season's on the line. They're all going to get in anyway. So they're all going to play, like, already teams that are already in high-stakes big games that are already conditioned. And they're just playing, like, okay, well, you know, if we win, we lose, whatever. We're still going to be a high seed. We're still going to move on. And we're playing ourselves into game shape. That's kind of what's happening. Whereas, like, take teams like the Leafs and the Habs and, like, even Edmonton, who's now down 2-1, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they are. Those guys are fighting for their lives. Like whoever comes out of those series is like already on it. Like they've already seen the end result possibilities, and they're like, oh, we're gonna fight. Meanwhile, you got guys like Tampa who are notoriously soft anyway, just playing these meaningless seeding games. Like, oh no, we're the two seed. So if Montreal upsets Pittsburgh, it's like, oh well, you know, I don't have to worry about that. I'm playing the team that's actually a lottery team. So who cares where I finish? Like, the setup doesn't blend well with these seeding games, and I think it's stupid. I think everyone should have just entered a tournament immediately and best 3-5 first round across the board. Let it have at it. I know obviously for scheduling purposes it would have been brutal, but like, you know, guys are playing back to backs right now anyway, and start the games an hour earlier, whatever. Like it would have worked. But instead we got these like
they're awkward. They're not really like, and I've tried to watch some of them, and there's just be like you kind of hit it on the head. The urgency isn't there. Like Boston hasn't. I don't think Boston's won a game yet. I don't think they care to win a game either. And I know that they're talking about it. They're like, hey, look, you know, these guys here, they're going to compete and they're trying to get it. But Boston's 0-2. They're not really putting it on. And I think like the guys that they're starting, I think they started their backup in game one. And that's nothing that like, that's not against the backup. I'm just saying if these games had meaning, you're starting your starter, you're starting your main guy, you're starting your top line, everybody's getting minutes. And these games kind of seem like they're just kind of throwing whoever out, see what happens.
So like, the inverse of that is like, imagine if the NBA wasn't playing seeding games and like we were watching teams like Philly and Boston fighting best 3-5 series. It would cripple the rest of the games because you would be like, oh, well, this isn't very interesting. Like, why would I want to watch these? Like, why would I want to watch the Raptors play when these guys over here are fighting for their lives? And meanwhile, the Raptors are just dilly-dallying playing. They're like, you know, we're pretty much locked into the 2 seed. We'll be fine as a 2 seed. And we've accepted that. And we're not going to really press it or risk injury. You know, like, that's not exciting. And I think that's where the NHL goofed. It's the only thing I can say where the NHL messed up. And we've kind of hammered it here for a while. But, like, that's my biggest gripe about the NHL restart. Is that I'm not vested in these weird seeding games at all.
Speaking of your NBA, before we dive into whatever the hell is wrong with Major League Baseball, I'm pretty sure Philadelphia took a major blow today. And I'm curious your thoughts on... Yeah. I mean, I know that Embiid's really their guy, but...
It's Batman and Superman, so you could say that, but it's, I don't know. Where do I begin with Ben Simmons where we don't dedicate an episode to what I think of Ben Simmons? It's tough because he's an elite defender. He's 6'9", he's long, he's got great handles, great court vision. He does everything you need him to do, but he can't shoot. And... No. That is – it screws up the whole offense when he's not on the floor. So I'm not entirely convinced the Sixers aren't – like, you can't lose an all-star level point guard generally and generally be better. Like, that's not how the world works. So – but – I don't know. If it was – oh, no, sorry. But if it was going to happen, this would be the way it would happen with a guy that, in the modern NBA – who can't space the floor, gets hurt, and it frees up that offense because you're kind of operating in the constraints of Ben Simmons' limitations right now. Like, they lost J.J. Redick and they lost Tobias Harris and all those things. But can they get a guy off the bench that has range in his jump shot that can be a space threat? I obviously, like, Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid can, like, carry the offense, but I don't know that losing Ben Simmons is a bad thing. It's going to be defensively for sure. It's going to hurt them defensively, but offensively, which is where they're really struggling. It's going to be telling. I'm not going to say they're going to be better. I'm going to say there's a small possibility of improvement from the Sixers, which is just going to blow Ben Simmons' whole career out of the water if it happens. If we see that happen,
you think they move him?
Well, yeah, they'll definitely move him. But nobody's going to really want him. In the modern NBA, the way we play basketball now and the way the game's played, Ben Simmons' skill set is a viable tool, but it can't be the primary tool. If that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like trying to build a deck with just like, you know, a wrench. That's how his tool set fits into the modern NBA offensively. Defensively, he's still one of the best defensive players in the league, but offensively – other than his good passing, and he can score down low because he can take smaller guys down low where he's 6'9 and work over the top of them. But when you clog the paint against the Sixers, they don't have enough floor spacing, and that's how the Raptors were able to just utterly dismantle them this year because they took away the paint, and the floor spacing is bad, so it's easy to guard them. Because if Ben Simmons catches a ball in the corner, you don't have to run at him because you know he's not going to shoot. He literally refuses to shoot. So I feel that if you've ever seen an all NBA player talent get hurt and a team possibly get better, now's the time.
Who do you see coming out? Why don't you give me your top four? Who do you see coming into the Eastern Conference top two teams, and who do you have coming out of the West right now? Because I know that in our early talks, the Sixers and I think the Bucks were in your conversation. I know that we're still both Raptors guys, and I am unapologetically on the Raptors repeating. I don't
care what anybody says.
So I know.
I just, I very early on this year kind of said, like, I don't think this team is going to be very good. They proved me dead wrong, and I couldn't be happier about it. If you think the Raptors are going to repeat, if you watch basketball, it's a growing sentiment when teams are watching them. The analysts are watching the Raptors all the time and watching them Hulk smash teams because they're so – they have the best coach in basketball. I don't care who won coach of the year. Nick Nurse is the best coach in basketball.
Tragedy that is.
Yeah, he lost by one vote, and the fact that he lost to Billy Donovan, who, by the way, you know, did a great job this year in OKC. I talked with him earlier. But, you know, a veteran point guard with a bunch of super young athletes that can just jump out of the gym, and a veteran point god like Chris Paul, think good things can happen if you guys just play together, and that's what's happening in OKC. And it's kudos to them. Like, no one expected that, so I understand that. Whereas the Raptors are the defending champions, but they lost Kawhi Leonard, which everyone wrote us off after, including – I said we were going to be like a six seed. So I won't say I wrote us off, but I definitely didn't have visions of what's happening right now. I wasn't sure if Siakam would take another step. I didn't know Fred VanVleet was going to emerge. I didn't know Norm Powell, more consistent minutes, would be a better basketball player than he's been. I didn't think guys like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson would have much to contribute. Like, there's a lot of things. I thought Gasol was 1 year closer to the grave. I was wrong. I felt like Serge Ibaka was the same. I'm partially wrong there. So there's a lot of good things to like about the Raptors' team defense. Nick Nurse's schemes are incredible. He's being – all these coaches that are up for Coach of the Year and one Coach of the Year are stealing from Nick Nurse. So it's one of those cases with Nick Nurse is where I think it's kind of like LeBron with the MVP. You could easily give him the award every year, but it's not very interesting. Now, mind you, I don't think Nick Nurse won Coach of the Year last year either. So
– no.
So because he took – they're like, well, he inherited a 59-win team that got better. But, like, it doesn't change the fact that, like, when push came to shove, we bottled everybody, including the league MVP, because Nick Nurse's defensive schemes were genius. So can the Raptors repeat? Absolutely. Would I bet everything I have on it? Absolutely not. But because I still believe in the NBA, superstars win titles, and the Raptors, unfortunately, as much as I love the guys, are devoid of that super-duper star that we had last year. Like, we never had it before. We had it for 1 year. We won a title. Now it's gone, you know? So Whereas the Warriors had three super-duper stars, we have none. The Lakers have two super-duper stars and a piss-poor supporting cast. The Bucks have one uber-duper all-generational super-duper-duper star and a pretty good all-star and a bunch of okay guys. Like, the key to beating the Bucks, the Raptors, is bottling Giannis again and making the rest of the Bucks beat you. And that's not really feasible. So as long as we can bottle Giannis, we can beat the Bucks. But I don't know if you looked at the stat line for what Giannis is doing to Miami right now. But he looks like a man amongst children. You ever watch videos of, like, grown men dunking on children on Fisher-Price basketball nets? That's what Giannis Antetokounmpo looked like against the Miami Heat tonight. And that scares the hell out of me. So, I don't know. My picks coming to the East are – I'm gonna be the homer. I'm going to say Toronto. My pick to come out of the West is still the Clippers. I think Lou Williams and Harris come back. And I think the Clippers are the best team in the West. I don't see it in L.A. Maybe Houston, James Harden, maybe. James Harden's notorious for fading late in years because he's too busy stat stuffing in October or November to leave it in the tank for a playoff run. Five months off, James Harden's fresh right now. So maybe Houston or L.A., the West. One of the L.A. teams are Houston. I think any of those three teams are probably going to be the ones that come out of the West. My pick is the Clippers, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I wouldn't bet against the other two either. But nobody else is coming out of the West. Like, that's it. It's either the Raptors or the Bucks in the East, and it's the Lakers, Clippers, or Rockets. And honestly, I kind of hope it's the Rockets because we match up really well with them, and I think we'd crush them if we came out.
I like it. So we talked a little bit earlier. The NBA in Florida has managed to bubble their players, staff, support, trainers, everybody in there, and no COVID. The NHL has done the same thing in Toronto and Edmonton,
nope.
Two sites. No COVID. Major League Baseball basically was like, all right, so look, the coaches have to wear masks, but we're still going to travel to everybody's city, except for Toronto, because the government said no.
There you go.
But everybody is just kind of moving around kind of freely and interacting with people. And wouldn't you know it, people are getting COVID-19. People are coming down. They're getting infected. And we've had instances where I think three teams at this point have had to like postpone giant swaths of schedule. The Marlins, in fact, I think tested positive and then decided to play anyway. So what, I mean, obviously baseball could have done different. They could have attempted a bubble system in a different way. I don't think you, obviously you can't do baseball in two hub cities, but I don't see why they couldn't do, you know, two cities in the, in each league, in the NL East, West and Central, AL East, West and Central. I don't know what's going on there. Obviously they're not going to cancel because of
money
and, you know, everybody kind of doing their own thing. It's been a, to be quite frank, and children cover your ears, it's been a fucking mess since they started. I love watching the Jays play. I did not love, they lost my interest because hockey and basketball are on and are doing very well. And the Jays were just off. They're just like, all right, we're off for COVID. And then they're coming back cold against a Braves team that's stacked with young talent as well. So
yeah, what do you think, by the way,
what do you think about what's going on in Major League Baseball? Cause we've kind of hammered the other two leagues a bit on their pros and cons. Baseball, we both love, but this is a bit of a, this is a bit of a disaster for the league. If I'm being honest with you,
where do you begin with how bad of a disaster this is? So normally I'm pro player. I'm all about the players. I don't give a damn about the weird old creepy pedophile billionaires. I know it's a wild slander, but like that's the joke I'm making right now. I don't care about these old ass men with tons of money that fund this crap and like they have them as vanity projects. Like basketball players buy nice cars and houses, billionaires buy sports franchises so they can like, you know, like, oh, look at this, I own this fellow over here. So it's first and foremost, I want to condemn the players here. The players refuse to bubble. Selfish, short-sighted, and stupid. And baseball is taking a beating because of it. And it's just ridiculous. Like the Marlins, the Phillies, and the Cardinals, and all these teams popping them. And it's canceling baseball. They're already operating on a, like a razor wire schedule. And you're like, everybody got like six doubleheaders now. And it's just like, this is ridiculous. Like baseball itself has been pretty good. I missed it. I enjoy watching it. I love the game. The atmosphere is horrendous in the stadiums. It's the worst by far because there's just 60,000 empty seats everywhere. But yeah, you said it best. Like we're Jays fans, so if we're gonna watch baseball, we're watching Jays games. Like I mean, I've watched other teams, but like if I want to watch, I want to watch the Jays. And it doesn't help that like our head coach just seems kind of outmatched by the mascot on the other team as far as strategy and game planning goes. So that hurts. Our young guns struggling definitely puts a damper on the situation. But I don't know, man. I know baseball is going to continue because the almighty dollar, but it's going to limp by the time, the way we're going and the rate we're progressing. The fact the story came out, the Marlins took a team vote, realized like 14 of them had COVID and they're like, ah, we'll screw it. We'll just go and play anyway. It's just an damning indictment.
It's negligent. Yeah.
And like, my thing is too, is that like, I don't want to slander all Americans because not all Americans feel this way, but there's this weird hypothetical situation where we're like, well, there's only like this small of a fatality rate. And no, they're actually kind of gassing up the numbers a bit. So 160,000 people died. They're probably inflated by 12%. 1,400 people died yesterday from COVID-19 in the United States. 2,000 people died on 9/11. So every day, in the United States, you basically have almost the equivalent of 9/11 happening daily, and people are finding ways to dismiss that. And baseball players being so, I don't know, I don't know the word I'm looking for here, dismissive, and like, oh yeah, let's go give the whole Phillies team COVID. Like, I don't know, it hurts me. I think it hurt me more when I love a baseball than like the 95 strike did. The 94 strike did, if that makes sense. It bothers me that much that these guys are that, I don't want to say stupid, but like, I'm going to say stupid. It's just stupid and unnecessary. And the fact they refused to bubble comes back to that. You can blame Manfred. You can blame whoever you want. But like, it's just baseball is the whole negotiation process to get them back to the table and get them in the game. And like the kind of greed being shown on both sides did not sit well. Baseball also has a CBA coming up soon, and it's going to get even uglier. But, like, it's hard to be like, oh, yeah, baseball's killing it right now when they're obviously just limping along for dollars. And it sucks.
Do you think that it would have been wiser, because baseball was really the first, they weren't the first to announce a return to play. They had this like really sloppy and lazy negotiating process where the players didn't agree to anything and the owners kept trying to push things. And then finally Manfred said, we're playing, which is what I think the league, what the players told Manfred. They said, you want us to play, you make us play, which fine. But do you think that they would have been better served to just like, baseball is something that needs the whole, like it needs the full schedule to really have its like proper impact. And this like truncated, like 60 game schedule, I was optimistic would be okay. I thought there could be some, you know, maybe some people would have like offensive runs or like we would see some like, you know, something good happen here. But all we're seeing is, and this is just me talking, I don't know if you're feeling this, I feel like the games feel rushed. They don't feel that good in terms of like quality of play. Like there's been some nice plays, but because the empty stadiums, because of the way things are happening, we're like canceling games on a whim as if this was some sort of like intramural like dodgeball tournament where like one team got the flu and we're just going to have to wait until they're better to play them. Like what you're telling me that we had to wait, what do we wait like 5 or 6 days for the Jays to play another game? And you don't get that kind, you don't see that kind of time off in a real schedule. You just don't. And in 162, you wouldn't see 5 or 6 games unless you're coming to the All-Star break. So like, it just, it just seems sloppy. It seems so sloppy to me, the way that they've rolled this out. They have.
It reeks a short-sighted capitalist greed is what you're really what it is.
Yeah. I think they probably would have been better served to just not go ahead with it. The NHL and NBA had already run their seasons at this point. So when they decided to come back, it was like, look, we're going to go for a championship. It's a very small amount of games. It's not every team that's involved. They decided to do bubble formats, which means that we get the benefit, the fans get the benefit of multiple games every single day. And yes, that will peter off as teams get eliminated and, you know, things move forward. But right now, there are 3 to 4 hockey games a day being played that I can watch on TV. There are 2 or 3 basketball games a day that I can watch on TV.
There's the same amount. It's the same thing. Right. They run the opposite. They run the exact same schedule. So you just pick and choose what you actually want to watch. So like I'll bounce back and forth between basketball and hockey, or I'll watch a whole hockey game instead of a basketball game. Like there's been nights where I've watched the Habs, the Leafs over, you know, Indiana versus Orlando or something, but like, you know, it depends. That's awesome.
Truncated schedule doesn't mean anything negative here, because we're just trying to, like, the NBA is trying to get in a couple of games to figure out seeding with this like expanded team format. They didn't just want to cut it. And the NHL has a playoff like play-in format, and it's been fairly exciting. Major League Baseball doesn't have any of that. I can't see how they're going to keep doing it, but they're going to. It's just, it's ugly at this point, and I feel like they're costing themselves more by playing this out than they would have been if they had just let it go. Just food for thought. I don't know if that's the case, but we'll see. I don't know. I think it's ugly at the best.
I hate it. It's a kill by enthusiasm for baseball. I'll still watch, but now with the other two back and doing it properly, it just feels like a waste of my time watching baseball.
I couldn't agree more. I don't have anything else to add. Do you have anything that you want to toss out into the ether before we say goodnight to our excellent fans? And thank you again for listening every single episode. We appreciate it. Can't thank you guys enough for the support.
Yeah. So I've been in discussions with another podcast that's recorded locally by 3 young men. Their podcast is called The Conch Boys. They're more of like a barbershop conversation vibe. I've actually was a huge fan of them before, because after, of course, creating our own local podcast, you created it, I've just kind of contributed. But either way, I wanted to give them a shout out. You can check them out on all platforms. You find us on. These guys are hilarious. They're a lot younger than we are, so their topics get a little more young manish, we'll say, but I'm wildly entertained by it. This week's episode, and kids, cover your ears, is Fleshlight versus Sex Doll. And again, cover your ears, or you can edit this out, but I'm going to give an answer if neither, but if I had to choose, I would choose the Fleshlight because I could at least hide it. There's nothing worse than post-nut remorse and looking down at a vibrating Dyson synthetic woman that you have to pick up and carry across the room and hide in a closet. So that's my answer to that question. So shout out to Conch Boys. Check those guys out. They're hilarious. And yeah, like the social media thing, follow me at SteveSteele23 on Twitter and Instagram. Don't even bother with Facebook, but you can add me there if you want. You can fire anything you want at me. I'm pretty hard to offend. Just try not to, you know, try to offend me, I guess the word I'm saying. You'll fail, but it'll just get awkward and no one really wants that kind of interaction. Yeah, that's it.
And we're a year old.
We're a year old. I'm on the first episode, so technically we are a year old.
Steve and I did episode one talking about Vince Carter. So I guess the question is, have you forgiven him yet?
No, but I will say, here's my olive branch to the situation for all those marks that forgave Vince Carter because the media told them to. Canadian basketball wouldn't be what it is today without Vince Carter. That can't be denied. It also wouldn't be the same without Steve Nash, but Vince Carter and Steve Nash are probably the two standard bearers for that. That being said, I'm extremely grateful that Vince Carter finally decided to call it a career because his career was pretty uninspired and not quite that spectacular other than some highlight reel dunks. And he's a fringe Hall of Famer at best, and people will stop talking about him, and I don't have to worry about him getting re-signed by the Raptors because I didn't want to see his 43-year-old ass on the bench. So best of luck, Vince. Hope you make the Hall of Fame. You can go in as a Brooklyn Net or a New Jersey Net. Maybe you can go in as Atlanta Hawk, or maybe you can go in as an Orlando Magic, or maybe you can go as a Phoenix Sun, or maybe you can go as a Dallas Maverick. Maybe you can go in as a Sacramento Kings. I don't know. But you're going to probably be the only Hall of Famer that played for 18 teams because you were – oh, yeah, he played for Dallas. I don't know if I mentioned Dallas too. Yeah, not too many Hall of Famers play for like 12, 13 teams.
Won't be able to choose a jersey.
Well, I mean –
going with the generic NBA.
Shaq kind of title hopped at the end of his career chasing rings. But, like, Vince – how many teams did I just list for Vince? There's Toronto. There's New Jersey. Well, Brooklyn and New Jersey are the same team. So Toronto, New Jersey, Orlando – Phoenix, Dallas, Sacramento, Memphis. I forgot Memphis. Like
Atlanta.
Yeah. So my man played for every single team under the sun, it seems. So I don't know how many Hall of Famers bounce around that much. So good luck, Vince. You don't have my vote, but my vote doesn't matter. But if you get in, I won't begrudge you. But for the love of God, don't go in as a Raptor asshole. There. That's my opinion on Vince Carter.
Oh, it's been fun, guys. Thanks for listening.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Armchair Commentary. Steve and I would like to thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our podcast. If you have any suggestions for future episodes or something you want to hear, or if you're looking to do a collaboration, feel free to reach out to either of us. We're always interested in your ideas. Let us know what's going on. If you haven't already, make sure to, again, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at SteveSteele23, at Armchair Commentary, at ArmchairCommon2. And if you can support this podcast, if you have the means and the desire to do so, head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. Sign up for any of the tiers. We appreciate any and all of the support. It's been an interesting week in sports. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks for listening.